You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
6:06 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning on the Civic Media Network. You are, of course, listening to Daybreak, and we are so glad that you're here. I am Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Welcome to a Thursday, another jam-packed, I was going to almost say fun show, but looking at the rundown, we'll squeeze a little fun in there someday, but the world is still on fire, and we are all part of it. But we're glad you're here. If you want to get involved in the show at any time, just jump on the phone and text line 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842, and we will get through this together. As we've done since Monday, we'll start with some headlines coming out of Iran, and as you can imagine, there's a lot and things are changing all the time, so that's why we kind of kick things off with this. First thing, Jamie, Iranian drone attacks have injured two people and damaged the terminal building of an airport near the Iran-Azerbaijan border. Azeri authorities said these are the first strikes on the country since the beginning of the conflict.
Yeah, we're also finding out this morning that the U.S. will start striking deeper into Iran, and the war is still in the early days, according to top officials. The U.S. House is expected to vote after Senate Republicans rejected a resolution aimed at requiring President Donald Trump to seek congressional approval for future military action against Tehran. We'll talk about that a little bit more in depth around 8 o'clock this morning. The death toll in the Middle East has now, as of this morning, raised to 1,230 as well after all of these strikes across the region.
Israel is said it's striking Iran and Hezbollah targets in Beirut. Iran, meanwhile, launched strikes against Israel. Jamie gave you the updated death toll, which is unbelievable. And Iran has accused the U.S. of committing an atrocity at sea after a submarine sank its warship in international waters, a first since World War II. 80 people have been killed and many more remain missing from that ship.
There's also a logjam of stranded passengers, and they are starting to clear as airlines, though, schedule new services and governments rally charter flights. The Iraqi and Kurdistan regional government said earlier today, that reports of a plan to arm and send Kurdish opposition parties into Iranian territory are completely unfounded.
And I'm going to read this without trying to not convey any judgment. During a briefing at the Pentagon Wednesday, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth criticized the media for supposedly focusing too much on the dead soldiers in an effort to make Trump, quote unquote, look bad. He suggested those deaths were getting disproportionate play compared to the military's successes. I'm going to be quiet now for a moment.
Those are facts. That's what the press is reporting. That's all I'm going to say.
And moving right along, because, anyway, so let's move away from that, because we will talk more about we've got a lot of that to cover. But we also wanted to get to the primaries that happened on Tuesday, especially there was a lot of attention paid on Texas, but there were also North Carolina and Arkansas. A lot of people paying attention to those as well as a blue wave maybe coming. That's what we're talking about for the midterms. And Texas made a lot of headlines.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're a political junkie, you were definitely paying attention to what was happening around the country on Tuesday night. In Texas, besides, of course, the defeat of Jasmine Crockett from James Tallarico, other races in Texas included Representative Dan Crenshaw, who lost his primary to State Representative Steve Toth, becoming the first sitting member of Congress defeated this year. Now, Toth won about 56% of the vote, running as a more strongly Trump-aligned candidate, interestingly enough. Crenshaw had previously broken with the president on several issues, including rejecting claims that the 2020 presidential election, back to that, was stolen, and supporting negotiations on immigration policy.
Yeah, it was that's really a first, because now I don't know if Toth actually had an endorsement from the president or not? Because that's usually, that's been the kiss of death up to this point. People aligned with Trump can win, but not if they get his endorsement.
Yeah.
Because that hits a little harder. So there were other congressional races in Texas. Al Green, not the singer, he was a Democrat. He's trailing a fellow Democrat Christian Menefee after redistricting forced them into the same district. Oh, that's wild how that happens, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that's going to a runoff in May. Conservative YouTuber Brandon Herrera. I'm sorry.
Yes, you read that correctly. You did read it correctly. It's good.
This is where I show my age. I want somebody to be a little more experienced in something than being a YouTuber.
Sure.
I don't think, hey, I'm an influencer. Oh, then you should go to Congress, please, because that seems right. Anyway, Brandon Herrera is leading Tony Gonzalez, though that contest will also go to a runoff.
That's
Texas.
I think that is fascinating based on what we're starting to find out about Tony Gonzalez, that the voters were still okay enough with that story of affairs and deaths. And
how does that surprise you, though? Based on what we are living through with everything going on with the Epstein files and indictments,
sure,
and convictions, and it doesn't surprise me at all. We have zero moral character left in this country when it comes to Canada. We don't care.
No.
It's tribalism. And the members of your tribe can do whatever they want as long, even when they do face consequences.
Right.
It doesn't matter because you want to own the other side. You want to defeat the other tribe. And you may know in your heart that your tribe member is a piece of human garbage. Not that Representative Gonzalez is. That's just in general. I'm just
generalizing.
Talking in general,
yes.
Generalizing. You may know that, but as long as they're against the people that you're against, they're on your side and they're fine.
There were a couple points about these Texas primaries that I thought were interesting. First and foremost, the amount of people who were like, "I can't believe Jasmine Crockett didn't win in Texas. Are you kidding?" This is Texas. We know that politics are much different there. This was a black woman running for a higher office in Texas. I hate to say this, but this is what happens in some of these states. The white guy was probably going to do better in some of those areas than Jasmine Crockett.
She won there once.
But that was just as a representative. Now she was trying to seek higher power. She's not allowed to do that. Are you kidding? Especially in some states like Texas, right?
Yeah, and I'm happy with either one of those candidates. I understand. I like Jasmine Crockett.
I do
style.
Too.
I agree. I think she stood up and she made her points. I think what I've seen about Tallarico, I like him too. It's going to be interesting. The politics of love and understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck with that, kid. Because you're wading into a place that is lacking all of the things that you campaigned and won on.
Especially in that state. That state does not play with love and understanding if you watch the political cycle and the circles that happen in Texas. One of the other things that I thought was interesting in Texas was the fact that Donald Trump did not weigh in on this race. He's probably going to weigh in now on some of these runoffs, but prior to that, he had basically stayed out of it. And let's be realistic, with this particular president, that's usually because he's waiting to see who the front runner is so he can look like he was correct in his picks. That's usually what he's done in the past.
That's usually what he does, and it has not worked.
No, it hasn't.
He is not the great prognosticator. He has been.
So
I wish I had
see.
A running total of how many that he how many candidates that he endorsed that ended up losing. Most of them, if my memory serves.
We'll see what he does, because right now they are in a deep runoff between Ken Paxton and John Cornyn. He has not weighed into that race. The Cornyn camp is actually hoping for the endorsement, which I think is interesting. I don't know if that's the strategy I would go with just based on the track record, but if you think it's going to help you in Texas, I guess more power to you. Now, Arkansas was also interesting on Tuesday night, and if you are somebody who is watching watching what's happening across the country and you're hoping for that blue wave. This gave everybody a little hope, I think, because yep. Democrat Alex Holliday won a special election for a state House seat with 57% of the vote. He defeated Republican Beau Renshaw. Now, that win is notable because it's a heavily Republican state, obviously, and it could signal a little bit of a stronger Democratic turnout as we head into the November midterms. North Carolina was also fascinating, I thought,
this was a big one.
Yeah.
And this may be, this is one John Fetterman, I hope, was watching. Because North Carolina, they got rid of three lawmakers who occasionally sided with Republicans to override the Josh Stein, the Democratic governor. So, watch yourself there, Fetty.
Yeah. We're talking about Shelley Willingham, Nasif Majid, and Carla Cunningham. Those were the three that did not do so well in their primaries. Meanwhile, longtime North Carolina Senate leader Phil Berger, who did have Trump's endorsement, is locked in a very razor-thin race with a county sheriff by the name of Sam Page. He challenged him also on the right. And then another closely watched race right now in North Carolina involves Democrat Representative Valerie Fushi, who is primarying against a progressive challenger. It's too close to call, and that one, they're still kind of parsing through that even on a Thursday. That could go into a recount. Now, the progressive in that race centered her campaign on opposition to a proposed local data center project, while Fushi argued that the issue should be decided by local officials. Where have we heard that before?
We're hearing it all over here, and it's still going on. There's still hearings happening all over the state.
Yes.
I think the latest ones are going to be in Toma, I think.
Yeah.
That's where Charlie Behrens is going to speak, because he's become a big, he's become very involved in the data center issue. But yeah, you see, it proved a point. The candidate with Trump's endorsement,
long time
guy, still, you know, still too close to call. But if you would think, well, if the president's endorsed me, I should be able to blow right through. Doesn't really happen.
I also thought watching North Carolina was interesting just based on the more moderate Democrats, because I feel like we're at this critical junction, especially if you are a Democrat, because a lot of the party's voters are frustrated and they are looking for candidates that they believe are going to fight harder for the priorities, fight back more against this particular administration. And those are the same dynamics we're starting to see play out over and over. And we're even starting to see a little bit of that here in Wisconsin. So I found Arkansas and North Carolina very fascinating on Tuesday night.
It is interesting, but it's also a conundrum for the Democrats, because I agree. I want candidates who are going to fight harder. The problem is that fight seems to be coming from the more progressive candidates who don't have wide appeal for some of their ideas, including from myself. That's not so. What do we do? We have to find fighters who not work in the middle, but don't work so far left that they turn off the majority of Democratic voters. That's the key, and we're failing at it right now.
Yeah, both parties have their own factions. It's 6:19 right now. You are listening to Daybreak. Coming up, Brad Schimmel back in the news. This is the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Across the state of Wisconsin, Daybreak with Brian and Jamie is back.
6:22 right now, and Brian, for our centrist viewpoints, we're getting a little pushback over on social media. Scott texting in this morning on MDX saying, just a friendly reminder, if you're going to throw out an argument that both sides do it, please explain to me how the radical progressive stance is radical. Give me a policy topic of radical left. That was a comment that we got on our text line, and if you'd like to chime in this morning, 1-855-752-4842, 1-855-756.
I'll just throw out three words: defund the police. That is a radical left movement. I have been a Democrat my entire life. That was dumb, and it alienated not only Democrats, it alienated most rational citizen. Now, if you say we need to reform the police.
Yes.
Yes. Same thing. Choose your words. Choose your message. Choose your know your audience. But yes, police reform, 100%. Got to do it.
Yeah.
You know, is too much going into the paramilitary arm of police departments? Probably, depending on where you're at. If you're in a rural area, do you really need a giant SWAT team and armored vehicles? I don't know. If you're in downtown Detroit, do you? Probably more so. So, but yes, defund the police. We'll just start there. And, you know, hey, listen, you're always welcome to disagree with what we say. But, you know, come with some more receipts.
I think at some point, and we were talking about this on the live stream, which is where some of these comments started coming from. That was our secret show within the show. Both parties, Democrats and Republicans, have your more centrist, and then you have your more extreme wings of the party, right? And at some point, if you're a Democrat, there's going to have to be some sort of compromise, because the infighting between the more progressive wing and the more central or maybe old wing, depending on how you want to phrase it, isn't getting
rational.
It isn't getting anybody anywhere. It's not getting anybody anywhere. And because they end up sabotaging their own plans because they can't actually agree on the policies.
And here's another issue I have with the far left end of our party. Pardon me. They seem to want the perfect candidate.
Mm-hmm.
There is no perfect candidate. And you can tell me that I'm old and I'm out of touch. I don't think so. There's no perfect candidate. Maybe being older grants me a little hindsight to say, when you look for perfection, you're never going to find it in anything. So it's to Jamie's point. Pardon me. To Jamie's point, there has to be the compromise, because if there's no compromise, I'm sorry, if you're a far left progressive in this party, at this point, your stuff's not getting through. Now, can you put a more progressive candidate up? Of course. And I want to listen to their ideas.
Yes, absolutely.
But I'm also free to go, boy, there's too many cons in their column and not enough pros. And just like you may look at a more centrist leaning Democrat and say, well, there's too many cons there for me. Then we got to figure it out together, because right now, that's how we got in the place we're in, because we couldn't put up a unified fight.
Yep.
You know, there were a lot of progressives that wouldn't vote for Kamala or wouldn't vote for Hillary, and this is what got us. So your protest votes, you have a right to make them, but man, oh man, do they screw things up.
Because I think one thing that Republican voters do better is they will swallow the poison pill. No matter who that candidate is, they will always vote for that person, whether they agree with the extremism or not. They will always, always vote for that person. And then that is how they defeat the Democrats in races. We want to talk about somebody who is a little bit more extreme, who hasn't made some headlines in quite some time. Interim U.S. Attorney Brad Schimel is now saying he's been blindsided by the news that U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin opposes him continuing to serve in the position beyond the expiration of his term later this month. He actually told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that he doesn't know where all the source of the vitriol is. They've worked together.
He apparently doesn't remember the last Supreme Court election?
No, I don't think he does. Parker, okay. Do we have time for this clip? Because we just want to remind you where some of the vitriol might be. This is Brad Schimel in his own words. These are the classics. Cut one.
There is not a constitutional right to abortion in our state constitution. That will be a sham if they find that.
There were times that when that camera went on, several of the liberal justices, they were on the brink of losing it. You could see it in their eyes and you could hear it in the tone of their voice. They are being driven by their emotions. A Supreme Court justice had better be able to set their personal opinions and their emotions aside and rule on the law objectively. We don't have that objectivity on this court.
Get our votes banked, make this too big to rig, so we don't have to worry that at 11:30 in Milwaukee, they're going to find bags of ballots that they forgot to put into the machines like they did in 2018 or in 2024 when Eric Covey you know, was ahead all night, and then all of a sudden Milwaukee County changed that.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened. I don't know if there was fraud there. There's no way for me to know that.
The same thing for these January 6th defendants who were all prosecuted in the Washington, D.C. district, which is overwhelmingly liberal. This part of the manipulation is to go to districts like that. They would never take their prosecution in a district where you had a fair shot as a defendant.
I don't know. Maybe some of those comments from the past. Those were just within the past year. Might be why Tammy Baldwin does not want him sworn in as the top federal prosecutor for the Eastern District of Wisconsin. Maybe, just maybe.
Short memory, selective memory. And if you don't remember, Schimmel was sworn in for the Eastern District on November 17th. He was appointed by your friend and Donald Trump's personal attorney, U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi. Interim U.S. attorneys are limited to 120 days. District court judges can vote to allow them to continue, something the senator has no power to block. So there's still a chance, but it seems a little disingenuous of Schimmel to go, I don't know why Tammy Baldwin would vote against me.
Short memory.
Seems weird.
Short memory. Maybe that's what it is. I think in politics, we all have to have a short memory. We'll give him a little bit of a pass today. 6:29 right now. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. So much more to come, including more Epstein files.
Want to join in on the conversation? Call or text 855-75-CIVIC. Now back to Brian and Jamie.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning on the Civic Media Network. It is 6:35 right now. If you are in Wausau listening on WXCO or in Richland Center on WRCE or even in Hayward on WBZH, we are glad that you're here. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. 855-75-CIVIC is how you get a hold of us. 855-752-4842. We've been talking about a lot of things, and we were getting into the far left of the Democratic Party and the far right of the Republican Party. And Gary, who is listening on WMDX, sent in a text, which I really enjoyed. The primary election is the time to fall in love. For the general election, it is time to fall in line in order to win. And I think that's something that all Democrats need to remember. Very well put, Gary. Text of the day. We don't have prizes. We don't really have a text of the day winner, but I just gave it to you. So if you're going to text the rest of the show, sorry, you're out of luck. Gary already won. The Department of Justice, which is... Oh, boy, they're doing a great job.
Bang up right now.
Yeah. They've withheld tens of thousands of documents from the public release of files connected to Jeffrey Epstein. That, according to a story in the Wall Street Journal, the review found more than 40,000 files missing from the documents that were posted online. The DOJ later confirmed that over 47,000, almost 48,000 files were taken offline for additional review. That started popping the other night, and it's just gotten worse and worse since then. And some of the things, because I don't know if Pam Bondi or the rest of the DOJ forget about a little thing that I like to call, and the kids are calling, the internet. And the internet is forever. Parker, you're a kid. Is that true? The internet is forever?
That is what I'm told, that the internet is for at least a while. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Because people are posting screen grabs of the deleted files. So they were out there. And the ones I've seen are horrific.
They are.
We won't get into any detail. We'll just imagine the worst thing you could think of related to this.
Yeah.
And then multiply it.
And a couple of the cases that we're talking about as far as some of these missing files were interviews from a woman who made unverified allegations of misconduct that involved the president and Jeffrey Epstein dating all the way back to the 1980s when she was a minor. She actually spoke with the FBI, with some FBI agents multiple times in 2019, mm-hmm. describing these alleged encounters that were arranged by Jeffrey Epstein. Now, the claims, of course, have not been verified, and the president has denied wrongdoing, saying that the Epstein files totally exonerated him. The particular case that we're talking about, I actually remember this circulating and seeing this circulate back mm-hmm. during the 2020 elections. There were a couple refilings of it, and then it basically disappeared. And at the time, I didn't give too much thought to it, right? Because there was a lot of different disinformation during that campaign. So many things were flying around on social media. So it was really hard to know what was real and what wasn't. But you look back to 6 years ago, knowing what we know now and what we've seen allegedly in the Jeffrey Epstein files, the situation looks very different.
And if I wish I could take credit for this, but Hillary Clinton said this the other day in reference to this during her deposition. She said the FBI doesn't interview someone. This woman had been interviewed four times.
Mm-hmm.
The FBI doesn't interview somebody four times if they don't see any meat on the bone of their allegations. So that's all I'll say. Remember that, you know, if you get interviewed and the FBI thinks your story is flaky, they don't bring it back. Maybe they bring it back the second time.
Sure.
They double check what you said. And while everything matches again, the story is identical. They bring it back the third time. Same thing. They bring it back a fourth time. Come on.
Yeah.
They're
checking for credibility. They're checking to see if there's any substance or credibility to the claims that you're making. Now, the DOJ says that these particular files were removed for review to ensure proper redactions, because that's been an issue for the DOJ throughout this entire process, including protecting the victims' identities and removing some of those explicit images. The officials also say some of the materials may include false or sensational claims submitted to the FBI, which must be reviewed before any sort of publication. This is all under the Epstein Files Transparency Act, which was voted on by Congress. So because of that, the government is required here to release most investigative records unless there are duplicates, privileged, unrelated, or anything that could harm an ongoing investigation, which we know is not actually the case. But this administration, time and time again, has shown that they are willing to protect and insulate the president as well as his inner circle. And when documents that are supposed to be public suddenly disappeared or they get delayed, that's going to continue to erode trust in the government as well as its effectiveness. And I don't know if this administration realizes it, but it's going to also start eroding trust in what they're doing, even among some of their more fervent followers.
The baseline is they don't care.
Right.
What they do is they've shown already, the administration, and starting from the top, they've shown a complete lack of regard or respect for the Constitution, for the Congress, for subpoenas, for being called in front of committees, anything. They will do what they want when they want, and that's all there is to it. And if you don't like it, well, lump it, because we're going to do it anyway. Oh, you're going to issue some sort of judgment against us? We're going to ignore it. You're going to tell us to show up in front of a committee? Nah, we're not coming. You want us to release these files? Well, they're on our desk. No, they're not. They don't exist. Wait a minute. What? Maybe we'll give you some, but then we're going to start pulling them down because a lot of them are really, really damaging to fearless leader.
And let's be honest, as realistic human beings who have been watching what's been playing out with this administration, not just over the last year, but during the first version of this presidency, we know that there's not going to be any accountability. We know that Congress isn't going to make them come in. There's not going to be forceful depositions like there was with the Clintons. They're not going to make public statements. Here's the thing, though, that I think this administration did not bank on. I think they thought that the public would just forget. If you continue to throw enough at all of us, including their own voters, that we would just forget that these files were in existence. That's not happening with the Jeffrey Epstein files.
No, because their miscalculation was they made that a cornerstone of the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump campaigned on the fact that everything in the Epstein files was going to come out. All of his backers, even some of his cabinet people, campaigned for him on that particular issue. And those people aren't going to forget. So this is, we always talk about bipartisanship. This is the one area, except for the Republicans in Congress, this is the one area that most of the country can agree with. We want to see what's in there. And I know there's the
we have different reasons
from the Republicans. What if some of your guys are in there? I don't care. Again, and I keep that's something I can't believe we have to keep saying that and repeating that we don't care if Democrats are in those files. We want them to face justice, too. It's equal opportunity. You commit these kind of crimes, I don't care if you're the Pope.
Right.
You're going, you got to answer.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, that leads us to some more developments with the Epstein files, right? Because the House Oversight Committee, led by James Comer, is expanding its investigation into Epstein and the federal government's handling of all of these files. In fact, the committee voted 24-19 to subpoena Attorney General Pam Bondi over her role in releasing all of the files. The motion was introduced by Nancy Mace and passed with bipartisan support. This was Nancy Mace yesterday. Cut two, please.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee issue a subpoena to the Honorable Pamela Jo Bondi to appear before the committee for a deposition regarding the department's handling of the investigation of Jeffrey Epstein and his associates and compliance with the Epstein Files Transparency Act.
A motion is been made. The committee will hold this motion in abeyance until the end of today's hearing. The committee will now proceed with today's hearing.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee issue a subpoena to the Office of Congressional Workplace Rights for the awards and settlements paid pursuant to Section 415 of the Congressional Accountability Act prior to December 12, 2018, with only redactions allowable for the personally identifiable information of victims, alleged victims, and witnesses. Thank you, ma'am.
A motion has been made. The committee will hold this motion in abeyance until the end of today's.
Now, here's what I'm going to say about that. Not the most compelling audio you'll ever hear, but the fact that it comes from Nancy Mace.
Yes.
Right? Who is
that proves my point.
Yes. Who is a huge, huge Trump backer. Right? We've seen her disagree with him on issues in the past and then turn around and give her yes vote in order to green light whatever policy.
Oh, sure.
So the fact that was the only reason I wanted to play that audio is because it actually came from Nancy Mace. And Comer does not sound happy. Right? He does not sound comfortable having to put this up for a vote. He obviously doesn't want to do this, but his own party is asking.
The walls closing in. There's only so much time to put it off, so many places you can run. At some point, it's going to come out. Nothing stays hidden forever. And right now, you're facing an entire country who wants to hear it. Your only hope is that little wall in the Congress that is keeping you at bay, us at bay, rather. But
it's eroding.
What do you think is going to happen in November? If in fact there is a blue wave, or it doesn't even have to be a blue wave. It's just a few seats have to flip here and there.
Well, let's be honest. In the House especially, they only have a 3-seat majority right now. So you're only looking at needing to pick up 3 total seats in order to either equal that out. Or if you get 4 seats, if we can all agree on the Democratic Party side, going back to our original arguments this morning, if we can all agree and even pick up a 4th seat, now you're looking at a much different scenario than you are right now. Now,
exactly. And that's going to change the whole picture. And once the Democrat, hypothetically, of course, once the Democrats are in charge of the Congress, things are going to move quick.
Yes.
Or hopefully they'll move quick. Talk about get in line or get out of the way. Schumer, Jeffries, get those guys out of the way because we're tired of strongly worded statements. Get in there and get started and clean this up.
Yesterday, it was interesting, too, during those committees meetings, because several Republicans joined Democrats in backing the subpoena. So you heard from Nancy Mace there basically saying we're going to vote on this. But you had Lauren Boebert and also Scott Perry voting to basically bring Pam Bondi back to the floor and hear from her and hear what her reasonings were for all of this. Walk back, redactions, non-redactions, pulling files. Hopefully they get her to the floor soon.
But one of her big worries is the Dow is dropping because of the war. So what's she going to just scream out? And she's going to have her little hit list of insults for everybody. But if Comer and the rest of the Republicans on there, mostly Comer.
They do their jobs.
Everybody else seems to want to see this. But yeah, Comer's got to do his job.
He does.
And everybody on that committee has to do their job, like they did with Kristi Noem the other day.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, in a separate Epstein-related circle, Howard Lutnick has agreed to testify voluntarily before the committee as part of the investigation. There's no date set for his deposition as of right now. He's not been accused of any wrongdoing. Democrats have questioned his past relationship with Epstein after there were some newly released documents and some photos of all of his interactions with Jeffrey Epstein. Justice, maybe, someday? It's happening in Europe. Yeah. They're trying.
We'll see. when we come back, another Supreme Court race in Wisconsin and more jabs being thrown back and forth. It is Daybreak. I'm Brian Noonan.
I'm Jamie Martinson. You are listening to the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Now back to more of Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
6:52 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning on the Civic Media Network. If you want to get involved in the conversation, well, we would certainly love to hear from you via phone call or text 1-855-752-4842 or 1-855-75-CIVIC if you would rather spell than do the numbers this morning. Whichever.
Sure.
they'll work either way.
Don't forget to check out our new social media channels on Instagram and Facebook. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie. And you can watch us on YouTube. The people, listen, give the YouTube a try once or twice just for the show within the show.
Yes.
I think the people who are listening, they may be infuriated by some of the things we talk, but things keep going during the breaks. So you can always check us out there. And of course, the Civic Media app. Why am I putting that? Why am I bearing the lead? You got to get the Civic Media app. It's free. That's a good price. And you can listen to all the stations in Civic Media. You can also listen to our third hour when WMDX goes to the Stephanie Miller Show at 8 o'clock. So if you're enjoying the show, or if we've just infuriated you so much that you have to hear what we say next, you're welcome to. Come along.
And sometimes the show is serious discussion, and sometimes it's just us talking about our dogs. It's fine.
Yes, so. That's the beauty of it. Just when you think the Wisconsin Supreme Court race is going to just go along and there's not going to be outside interference and it's not going to make a lot of headlines and it's going to be pretty much like anywhere else in the country for a Supreme Court race, nope. We're Wisconsin and we're going to do it our way. And Wisconsin Supreme Court Chief Justice Jill Karofsky has slammed appeals court judge Maria Lazar, the conservative candidate running for a spot on the state's highest court, saying that Lazar, quote, carried the flag of the right-wing interests, end quote, during her time working at the State Department of Justice. Oh, I was waiting because I was like, this is boring. We're just going to have an election for Supreme Court.
And it's getting close. It's getting close. We're just 32 days away, folks, from the April Supreme Court election. In fact, early voting starts on March 24th, so mark that on your calendars. This was all in an interview with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And in that interview, Karofsky, one of the court's four more liberal justices, said, quote, what I have seen of Judge Lazar is that she talks about being independent, and yet the work I saw her do at the Wisconsin Department of Justice was to really, in a couple of very stark examples, be the person who was carrying the flag of the right-wing interests. That is the full quote.
Oops.
That is, that's some quote, honestly, coming from one of the liberal justices.
Wow. Like I don't want to share a room with her.
No,
it was basically that. This is Mean Girls Justice Edition.
Yeah. Lazar, who is 62 years old, has been on the Waukesha-based District 2 Court of Appeals since 2022. She previously was a Waukesha County judge. She's also been an assistant attorney general under Republican Attorneys General J.B. Van Hollen and Brad Schimmel, who, if you are just joining us, we talked about him just a few minutes ago. She's also been an attorney in private practice, and she, of course, is running against appeals court judge Chris Taylor in that election for an open seat on the court, since Justice Rebecca Bradley, one of the more conservatives on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, decided not to seek another 10-year term. Karofsky and the other, the court's other liberal justices have officially, just in case you're wondering or didn't get it from that scathing comment, have endorsed Chris Taylor for office.
All right.
just in case.
Yeah, it was. She also, Karofsky also says, you know, points out that Lazar worked on Act 10, whether you agree with Act 10 or not. And she was defending the gerrymandering of the 2011 maps. So those are just part of her claims against Judge Lazar.
I do have a question, though, as I read these comments, you know, because we've been in Wisconsin for about 7 years. So I've seen the inner workings of politics in other states where we've lived, South Dakota, where I grew up, Minnesota, which is, you know, traditionally going to be one of your bluer states. This feels very unusual for judicial candidates to have this much scrutiny, at least from other publicly from other members of the court. And we saw this happen last go around in the election between Susan Crawford and Brad Schimmel, where several of the justices spoke out from both sides of the aisle. This seems a little, to me, this is strange. I don't really understand how this works, especially for a Wisconsin Supreme Court or any state Supreme Court that is supposed to be neutral in their views, go with the law, right?
It's confusing, but it's also troubling because I don't want my court politicized, and I'm not naive enough to believe that it's not. That's what every Supreme Court race has been based on in recent memory. But the law is the law. Mm-hmm. The law should not. And again, sometimes I know I sound very naive. The law is open to interpretation, but it's not open to politics.
Right.
And so it troubles me, and I'm surprised that there's not some sort of rule that sitting justices cannot comment on political races.
Right.
I don't want to see that. I know. As a person, they have views.
Right.
I know as a person, they are, you know, aligned to a political party. But once you put that robe on, you're not a political tool.
No.
You're a tool of the people and a tool of the law. And if you're coming out making these statements, it's really hard for anybody from the opposition party to, and that
to think that you're partial,
right there. But to think you can be impartial,
right?
It's always going to be. Well, they're going to vote this way. They're going to vote that way. And as we saw from the federal Supreme Court, that can change. That you know we had with the tariffs, conservative justices were voting against the president. But we don't hear normally, other than when they have
some sort
ruling,
of endorsement.
We don't hear those kind of endorsements, political endorsements. I don't want to hear them here in Wisconsin either.
There's a lot of things that I wish our Wisconsin legislature was working on. I wish they were gaveled back in to get some real issues done. But this to me seems like something that should bother both sides of the aisles, because the Republicans have also endorsed on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Obviously, we're seeing the Democrats do it as well. But that feels like there should be some sort of guidance there for our Supreme Court judicial system. 6:59 right now. You are listening to Daybreak. I am Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Will the Strait of Hormuz shut down affect the global economy? I'm going to say yes. We'll talk about
the national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.